How does the law define what a woman and a man are? What are the implications for people who do not fit neatly into those categories or who go from one to the other? How are transgender people treated with respect to marriage, discrimination, and sex-segregated systems like prisons and shelters? On Tuesday, April 26th, Attorney Cole Thaler gave a presentation called Transgender Law 101, Sex, Gender, and the Law. Cole described several recent cases of trans-related discrimination and outlined current legislature that includes trans people.
Thank you very much, Noah, and thank you very much for inviting me. I'm very happy to be here this evening. I'm going to give kind of a general overview of some transgender legal issues. So to go into a little bit what the state of things is in Massachusetts, we have two non-discrimination city ordinances that explicitly cover gender identity and gender expression. We also have two great cases, the case of Pat Doe versus Units, who some of you may be familiar with. This was a case involving a 14-year-old student in Brockton, Massachusetts, who was born male but identified as a girl and had been attending school in girls' clothing. She was being summoned to the principal's office every morning so she could be scrutinized, and if she was found to be too feminine in appearance, she was sent home to change. But if she was masculine enough, she could stay in school for the day. So obviously this was very traumatic for her. She was really unable to attend school because of this, and GLAAD sued the school and ended up getting an injunction that said that the school had to allow her to attend wearing the clothing that was appropriate to her gender identity. The court found that her clothing was expressive speech under the Massachusetts Constitution, that she had a liberty interest in her appearance, and that prohibiting her from attending school wearing clothing that was appropriate to her gender identity was a form of sex discrimination under the Massachusetts law prohibiting sex discrimination in public schools. So that was a great victory. It was actually the first case brought on behalf of a transgender student in the country. There was a recent case, Ally Lai versus Sky Publishing, that was, I think, an 02 or an 03 case, where a trans woman in Cambridge transitioned at her job. She was an editorial assistant at a publishing company, and she was fired after she transitioned, and the Superior Court held that her termination was a violation of the state sex discrimination law, which does not explicitly include gender identity and gender expression, but the court held that it implicitly included that category. Also, that her termination was a violation of the state disability non-discrimination law, but not a violation of the state law that prohibits discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation. So two good ordinances, two good cases, and we also have two good administrative agency decisions. The Mass Commission Against Discrimination several years ago issued two rulings on the same day, one of which held that trans people are protected under the state sex discrimination law, and the other of which held that trans people are protected under the state disability discrimination law. And those two decisions were actually picked up by the court in the Lai case and were used as support for its holding. So even though we don't have an explicit law statewide that is on the Mass Trans Political Coalition's agenda in the long term, but at the moment we're actually in good shape in the state. There's no negative case law or administrative rulings that has come out of Massachusetts for trans people. The Lai case that found that the termination of the woman who transitioned on her job was a form of sex discrimination sort of echoed what's emerging nationally as a really good string of cases in the employment context, particularly under Title VII, which is the federal employment non-discrimination law. Reversing what had been a history of cases finding that trans people were excluded from that law, starting with cases in the 70s and 80s that found that trans individuals, people who transitioned on the job, were not protected under the federal sex discrimination law for these reasons. The courts initially held that Title VII was intended to protect sex discrimination, which they interpreted to mean discrimination against men because they are men and women because they are women. And courts at first found that trans people either were sort of outside the categories of men or women and therefore were excluded from the protections of the law, or were not discriminated against because they were men being men or women being women, but because they were in transition from one to the other and therefore were not covered. That all changed in 1989 with the Supreme Court case of Price Waterhouse versus Hopkins, which people may be familiar with. This was a case involving a woman who worked for Price Waterhouse who was denied a promotion, not a trans-identified woman to my knowledge, but she was denied a promotion and was told that the reason she was not promoted was because, or what she should do to be promoted is walk more femininely, talk more femininely, style her hair, wear makeup, and wear jewelry. And the Supreme Court, bless their hearts, found that this constituted sex discrimination under Title VII because this was an example of sex stereotyping. Anne Hopkins was a woman who failed to act like one, quote unquote, and the court held that was sex discrimination that was prohibited under the federal law, reversing the string of circuit court opinions that had held otherwise. So with that turning point, since that case, there has been a wonderful string of cases all over the country, really. And, you know, they haven't all been victories, but by and large, the case law has been good. Most recently, there was a case, Smith versus City of Salem, out of the Sixth Circuit, that was just came down within the past few months, that found that an individual there who was a firefighter for the city who had transitioned on the job and was fired as a result, that constituted sex stereotype discrimination, sex discrimination because that individual was perceived to be a man who failed to act like one. And the Lye decision, the Massachusetts decision that I mentioned earlier, has really drawn on that string of case law. So that's the good news. The bad news comes in the family law context, where we see pretty much exactly the opposite. We see a couple of cases from a long time ago, the 70s. In particular, there was a case out of New Jersey in 1976 that was a great case that found that that upheld the validity of marriages where one of the parties to the marriage was a transsexual. Recently, and starting really with a case called Littleton out of the Texas Court of Appeals in 1999, the court in that case held that a post-operative transsexual woman who had married a man, she had had every surgery she could possibly have had. She had changed her birth certificate so that it said female, and the court in Texas said that it didn't matter. You were what sex it said on your birth certificate when you were born, and there was nothing anyone could ever do to change that. That language has been picked up, unfortunately, and echoed by courts in Kansas, in Florida, and most recently in Illinois. So it is creeping across the country. There's speculation, and I happen to agree, that all of the attention paid lately to the issue of same-sex marriage is really focusing the courts on the question of who is a man and who is a woman. They're looking for the bright line rule, and the bright line rule that they seem to like the best is what it says on your birth certificate at birth is what you are forever, no matter what steps you may take. And I actually want to quote a little bit of the language out of the Littleton case, the Texas Court of Appeals, only because it just captures so perfectly what the court's attitude and tone is, perhaps this case worse than many others, which I blame on the fact that it's Texas. People might disagree with me, but you'll get the idea. So this is the court holding that Christy Littleton, her marriage to her husband was invalid. The evidence fully supports that Christy Littleton, born male, wants and believes herself to be a woman. She has made every conceivable effort to make herself a female, including a surgery that would make most males pale and perspire to contemplate. Some physicians would consider Christy a female, other physicians would consider her still a male. Her female anatomy, however, is all man-made. We recognize that there are many fine metaphysical arguments lurking about here involving desire and being, the essence of life, and the power of mind over physics. But courts are wise not to wander too far into the misty fields of sociological philosophy. Matters of the heart do not always fit neatly within the narrowly defined perimeters of statutes or even existing social mores. Such matters, though, are beyond this court's consideration. Therefore, Christy was out of luck. So it's that kind of spirit, if not that exact language, that has really been picked up and carried in four states now. So I'll leave the case law alone for the moment, and again, I'm happy to come back to anything that people want to talk about, but moving on to legislation nationally, there is good news here. There are now six states that explicitly include gender identity and gender expression in their state non-discrimination laws. And I always forget one or two, but I'll try. It's Minnesota, Rhode Island, New Mexico, California, Illinois, and Maine. So again, not Massachusetts yet, although that is in the works. So there are six state laws. There's more than six, although I admit I don't know exactly how many states that include trans people in their hate crimes provisions. The closest to Massachusetts is Connecticut, which changed their hate crimes law last year to include the categories of gender identity and gender expression. Nationwide, there's more than 70, maybe more than 80 towns, cities, and counties that have passed local ordinances prohibiting discrimination on the basis of gender identity and gender expression. There's been a lot of success in that realm, although not success across the board. In fact, Indianapolis, an ordinance just failed within the past couple of days. And in terms of federal legislation, just briefly, there is no federal law that explicitly includes trans people. There are efforts to change that underway. People may be familiar with ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act, which is a bill that has been kicking around for, I think, a decade now. There have been efforts to make that bill inclusive of gender identity and gender expression. The bill is not going anywhere and may be scrapped in favor of new bills that are inclusive. There's a federal hate crimes bill, the Local Law Enforcement Enhancement Act, LLEEA, and an inclusive version of that bill either has been introduced in the House or is about to be introduced in the House. Pressure needs to be put on senators to support a trans-inclusive version of that bill. Senator Kennedy really needs to hear that he needs to put his support behind a trans-inclusive hate crimes act. So that's kind of the overview of the cases and where we stand in terms of legislation. On the ground, the problems that I see most trans people having and that I hear both personally and professionally have to do with people trying to get the sex marker changed on identity documents, including driver's licenses, birth certificates, and passports. People having trouble getting their insurance to cover treatment related to their transition. And people having issues regarding access to sex-segregated spaces, bathrooms, locker rooms, shelters, and just an abundance of issues in terms of prison inmates, in terms of treatment, harassment, violence, and access to hormones.
For more information, visit Massachusetts Transgender Political Coalition's website at www.masstpc.org or visit www.ga4.org/campaign/LLEEA.